at no time were they within our airspace. They were completely within international law.
For the second time in 2 days, Russian bombers fly close to Alaska. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, April 19th. Good evening. I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the Department of Corrections is trying a new tool to fight the opioid epidemic.
I didn't understand for a little while how people functioned on just air, but with people by your side and doing things the right way, you can get through it.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
For the second time in 2 days, Russian long-range bombers flew past the coast of Alaska. It's a surprising development that comes after nearly 2 years without any similar incidents. But military officials in Alaska say it isn't cause for alarm. On Monday afternoon, F-22 fighter jets were sent from Anchorage to intercept a pair of Russian bombers about 100 miles southwest of Kodiak Island. Then, according to Captain Anastasia Smith with NORAD's Alaska region, during late afternoon today, the Air Force spotted two bombers elsewhere.
At no time were they within our airspace. They were completely within international law, and they were within international airspace at all times.
The Air Force says there's no clear way to know if it was the same two Russian planes as the previous day. The pair was spotted moving off the coast of western Alaska, but Smith couldn't comment more specifically on where. And unlike the Monday response, today the Air Force didn't launch any jets to intercept the foreign aircraft.
Different circumstances warrant different responses. I can't really get into specifics about each of those potential responses. However, not launching F-22s, not doing an intercept, was deemed the most appropriate response in this situation.
Prior to this week, no Russian military planes had been intercepted since July 4th, 2015. But military officials in Alaska say this is within the realm of normal for Russian and American military aviation near the shared border.
Each year, it'll kind of ebb and flow. So we have seen years where there's been zero of these types of incidences, and we've seen years where there's about 15. So it really just depends. So this is not dissimilar from what we've seen in the past.
The incidents come at a time of worsening relations between the U.S. and Russia. Around the country, Republican Congress members are dogged by protesters hoping to stir up resistance to President Trump's agenda. Alaska Congressman Don Young, though, drew a friendly crowd today at the Chugiak Eagle River Chamber of Commerce. One constituent asked why Republicans didn't have a bill to replace the Affordable Care Act ready to put on the president's desk after the election. Young says his side of the aisle took easy votes to repeal the health law when they knew Barack Obama held veto power, but he says they weren't ready for a Republican White House.
We were unprepared. I don't deny that. And very frankly, the work had not been done to address the issue of health care.
Young told the audience they could expect a new Republican bill before July. He says Speaker Paul Ryan's bill, which was withdrawn for lack of support, would have hurt Alaska. And he says he didn't like a provision that would have allowed companies to raise rates on senior citizens relative to younger people.
Well, I happen to be a senior citizen. That disturbed me deeply. As far as premiums go, raise it 5 times over the young person.
Young responded in personal terms to a question about opioid addiction.
I'm a little experienced in this. I've lost 2 nephews to it. And I have actually 2 grandkids that have become drug addicts. And if I can catch the dealer, you're going to see me probably behind bars. Because that's wrong.
Afterward, he didn't offer specifics, though he said his nephews were addicted to crack.
This is quite a few years ago. And of course, I have people that are frankly been on and have used drugs, and it's not a good thing.
Young also repeated calls for Alaskans to defy the feds and build a road through the Eisenbeck National Wildlife Refuge to connect King Cove to Cold Bay. He said he was speaking as a constituent rather than a congressman. He also said he'd like to revive plans for a Susitna hydroelectric dam. The appearance was the only public event Young spokesman said the congressman had in the Anchorage area during the two-week congressional recess. Meanwhile, Alaska's senior U.S. senator had no public events scheduled for Anchorage this recess. She spent today in the MATSU. At MATSU Technical Career Technical High School, Senator Lisa Murkowski chatted with awe-struck teenagers. Murkowski says she expects a challenge finding federal dollars to help Alaska projects, including programs that have helped MATSU Career Tech. Murkowski says she's trying to educate her fellow senators.
Making sure that it's understood which of these federal programs really do help us here in Alaska, and being a strong advocate at a time when budget considerations are very real and very substantive. So it's a challenge, but that's what we do.
Murkowski defended her decision to not attend a town hall meeting in Anchorage tonight that none of Alaska's three-member congressional delegation planned to attend.
Every day that I'm back here in the state, I'm making myself available in the communities that I'm in, basically making sure that I am in places to go and listen to Alaskans.
After the school, Murkowski was due to visit a local senior center. Murkowski's spokeswoman said earlier this week that neither of today's events were open to the public. The Department of Corrections is trying a new tactic in the opioid epidemic, Vivitrol. It's a monthly injection that curbs cravings for heroin and other drugs and stops people from getting high. Alaska Public Media's Ann Hillman learned more.
Sadie Douglas entered Highland Mountain Correctional Center 2 years ago.
I got here and I was completely hopeless. I really was. I suffered from severe depression when I first got here.
Douglas's story is pretty common among people with addictions. She was prescribed pain pills, got hooked, and eventually switched to heroin. In the process, she lost her husband and kids. Eventually, she was convicted of drug and theft charges. Since entering Highland, she's joined a sobriety program and found faith in God. But even after not using opioids for 2 years,
it's always there in the back of your mind. If you're having a bad day, or if you feel sad or alone, or you just miss your family and you don't want to feel those feelings, yeah, I mean, you think, well, why don't I just go get high and then I don't have to feel any of it?
That's why she joined the Department of Corrections' new Vivitrol program. Vivitrol is an injectable form of naltrexone that blocks cravings for opioids and prevents people from getting high off of them. Naltrexone has been around for decades in a pill form, but for the pills to stop cravings, you have to remember to take them every day. Vivitrol is administered once a month by a provider. Autumn Vea, who oversees substance abuse programs for the Department of Corrections, says giving inmates an injection right before they re-enter the community helps them stay sober longer, but it still needs to be given alongside other therapy or counseling.
Oftentimes when offenders re-enter into their community, all their triggers come back. And so this will help them block their cravings long enough to either, one, be connected with an aftercare provider, or to go on to live a sober, healthy lifestyle if they've learned enough coping skills behind the walls.
Prisons across the nation are offering Vivitrol, and the early data is promising. Pew Charitable Trusts reports that Vivitrol recipients at a prison in Massachusetts only had a 9% recidivism rate over 4 years. That's compared to the 77% national rearrest rate for drug offenders over 5 years, according to Bureau of Justice statistics. Vivitrol won't work for everyone. Vea says it can increase symptoms of depression and psychosis and can cause liver damage. So they test for all these things before administering it.
Part of our diagnostic process is just making sure that Vivitrol is the right medication for the right offender at the right time.
The pilot program is starting in Highland, but will eventually be offered at correctional facilities in Anchorage and Fairbanks. As of mid-April, 4 people had received the shot. The drugs manufacturer gave 1,200 free samples of the medication to the department. On the outside, the monthly injection can cost about $1,000 if a person doesn't have Medicaid or insurance. Vea says the department is also looking into offering 2 other addiction treatment medications in the future, methadone and Suboxone. Sadie Douglas will receive her first shot a few days before she's released in late April. She says she's a different person than she was when she walked into Highland 2 years ago.
I didn't understand for a little while how people functioned on just air. Life's hard and it hurts, but, you know, with people by your side and doing things the right way, you can get through it.
Douglas says she has a strong support system waiting for her on the outside, and she plans to enter treatment as soon as she's released. Families and others can refer inmates to the program by contacting the Department of Corrections. From the Urban Affairs Desk, I'm Ann Hillman.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the state Senate passes a survivor benefits bill.
It would be so wrong for us to fail those communities and family members because we can't agree on a couple of issues.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing freight transportation to 13 rural Alaska communities. NAC offers a variety of service options to get the freight where it needs to be safely. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
And by
Wells Fargo, with over 13,000 ATMs and more than 6,000 branches coast to coast. For a branch location near you, visit wellsfargo.com.
The survivors of state-employed police and firefighters who die in the line of duty would receive health insurance under a bill the Senate passed today. The Senate amended House Bill 23 so that it no longer requires municipalities to cover their workers' survivors. Instead, municipalities will be able to opt in if they choose. North Pole Republican Senator John Coghill says the bill combined different ideas from more than 2 years of debate.
It would be so wrong for us to fail those communities and family members because we can't agree on a couple of issues. This is the best we can do, given the time frame that we have and all the conditions we have to work with.
Both former Governor Sean Parnell and Governor Bill Walker have provided benefits to survivors of state troopers who've died in the line of duty. But these survivors have lobbied over the last two sessions for a law to make the benefits permanent. The bill would cover surviving spouses for 10 years, most dependent children until age 26, and dependents with permanent disabilities for life. Anchorage Democratic Senator Bill Wilkowski proposed an amendment that would have required municipalities to participate. The state would cover half the cost of municipalities with fewer than 10,000 residents. Larger boroughs and cities would have been required to pay the full cost. Wilkowski says no one should be left out of the system.
If you were to ask the people of Alaska, should this be something that is required, I think it would overwhelmingly be yes.
Wilkowski's proposal was defeated by a 13-6 vote, with Wasilla Republican Mike Dunleavy joining the five minority caucus Democrats in voting for the amendment. Coghill says it may be appropriate to require municipalities in the future once there's a system in place. He notes the bill would allow both private donors and the state to provide money to lower the cost for municipalities that choose to opt in.
Maybe there should be a requirement put on it. I don't disagree entirely. I just don't know that when you first formulate it and then you put it out like a suit of clothes and you must fit it, if it's going to work for every community. So I think there has to be time for that.
All 19 senators present voted for the bill. It goes back to the House, which must decide whether to agree to the Senate's changes. Dillingham's new assistant district attorney is in town as he begins a transition to take over the caseload. His arrival comes after a 2-year fight to keep the local DA's office open and staffed with a prosecutor in Dillingham. KDLG's Dave Benninger has more.
Dan Doty is a 2013 William & Mary Law School grad who started his career as a state's prosecutor in Bethel.
I worked there in Bethel for a little over 2 years before I started working in private practice in Anchorage. I did that for a year, then worked at the municipal prosecutor's office in Anchorage for a little while before the state reached out to me and told me that they would like somebody with rural experience out here running the office here in Dillingham.
Doty is taking over the caseload from Pamela Dale, who has been assigned to the Dillingham court since the beginning of 2016. At that time, it wasn't clear the Dillingham DA's office would stay open, and after one of the two ADAs was laid off and the other quit, Dale was hired to take the cases but work from Anchorage. In an interview with KDLG in February 2016, she pointed out that would not necessarily be a bad setup.
I understand that the community would want their DA in the community, but I can also tell you that I do not believe that Dillingham is being sold short having the Anchorage District Attorney's Office handling this jurisdiction.
She highlighted the ability to take felony charges before an Anchorage grand jury for indictment sooner, avoiding a complicated delay scheme that often results in temporarily reduced charges and lower bails. Another plus was having senior staff available for help and advice. Dale proved to be a feisty and dedicated prosecutor who kept her eye on the ball even as she lived and worked primarily from Anchorage.
I live downtown every single morning. The first thing I go into the office and I look to see if there's any in custody arraignments. So you're covered 7 days a week. And my entire job is the Dillingham calendar.
Still, law enforcement and the community had grown accustomed to having their ADA in town. And after it was cut from the budget, many spoke up vigorously to get it back.
The overriding message was that there's just simply no substitute for having local presence in the community.
That's Representative Bryce Edgman speaking in January about the community input he and Senator Lyman Hoffman had heard. The Walker administration announced late in 2015 that the Dillingham office would be closed to save an estimated $340,000 annually. Hoffman and Edgman fought to keep the office open.
I certainly had my doubts as to whether we could get it in the budget, number one, and number two, whether we could actually get it staffed in Dillingham.
The Department of Law announced in January that it found its attorney to send to Dillingham and would keep the office open with Doty and one paralegal assistant. Dillingham is a busy court with about 400 criminal cases filed annually. After a transition with Dale, Doty expects to take over just about all of them, minus one case she'll retry later this year, and a homicide case being handled by a more senior prosecutor from Anchorage. The DA's office itself will move from the Bristol Inn downtown to a converted rental home closer to the new courthouse by the airport. Having made his rounds between a few initial visits to town, Doty says he's happy to be part of a committed team.
You got a very dedicated police force at DPD. You've got a lot of very competent troopers at the AST post here. I met with Mayor Ruby, who's very dedicated to having a prosecutor out here, and she was very welcoming and enthusiastic about having me here. It's been nice to have folks be so welcoming, so I'm looking forward to serving this community and living in it at the same time.
He and his wife will officially move to town next month. He says they hope to soon close on a house and are planning on starting a family here. In Dillingham, I'm Dave Benninger.
At any given time, over a quarter of the beds in Alaska prisons are occupied by people who haven't been convicted of a crime. That's according to the Alaska Judicial Council. That may change in the coming months as a result of one piece of 2016 Senate Bill 91 that establishes pretrial services. KTOO's Caroline Halter has more.
Jerry Fox is in charge of developing Alaska's new pretrial program, part of which is an assessment tool that will be used to determine if someone awaits trial in prison or in the community.
It measures the likelihood of an individual committing a new criminal event between the time that they are arrested and their case is disposed of. The other thing our tool will measure is whether or not you are likely to fail to appear in a future court hearing between arrest and disposition of your case.
It's basically using statistics in place of human judgment to assess risk. Fox likened it to car insurance.
If you are low risk, we want to help you stay out in the community, and here's why. Most people that are in jail for more than 3 days end up losing things like a job, an important significant other in their life, their apartment, and as those things begin to unravel, they become more desperate. So what happens is we actually increase the crime rate.
Joshua Quintal, like many in Juneau and Douglas, is worried about the upcoming releases.
They're going to be released out of custody with nothing, and I feel like that's setting up a lot of people for failure. It's setting up Juneau for failure.
Quintal was arrested for multiple property crimes about 2 years ago. Unable to afford his $75,000 bail, he sat in Lemon Creek Correctional Center for 3 months.
It was rough on me, but it gave me time to find out what was more important to me. So I'm not going to say that the sitting in there in jail wasn't good for me. I think it probably was.
If it weren't for his wife, Brianna Heller, who agreed to be his custodian for 9 months, he would have been in for much longer. Heller said she's glad her husband got out, but she knows that many in Juneau do not have the same support that they had to make it work.
I think a lot of people are almost relieved to be in jail, believe it or not, because they don't have to hustle anymore. There is a huge, huge amount of people that are like the undesirables, and it really sucks for them, you know, that jail's almost a better option because they'll have a shower or they'll be fed.
Quintal has a lengthy criminal history going back to age 14 when he says his drug addiction began. Fox said that criminal history will likely be a factor in the new assessment.
One of the most likely pieces of the tool will be, what has your criminal pattern looked like? For example, have you committed 3 crimes in 5 years or 8 crimes in 5 years? Right? So the density and your involvement in the criminal justice system matter.
In addition to the new assessment tool, pretrial defendants will be monitored through in-person visits and ankle monitors. Minus a few exceptions, this is something that hasn't been done before, even for those currently out on bail. Fox said that connecting people to treatment, especially those with addiction, will be crucial to the program's success. The new tool will be piloted in September. Fox said they'll run about 8,000 assessments before full implementation in January.
That was Caroline Halter reporting from Juneau.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Older Persons Action Group publishes Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide publication for seniors, and is an excellent source of information for families and caregivers. SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
The Fairbanks North Star Borough School Board has renamed a school to replace a name tied to a man convicted of raping a child. The board on Tuesday voted to change the name of Badger Road Elementary School to Midnight Sun Elementary School. The school is located off Badger Road, which was named for Harry Badger, a prominent strawberry farmer in the early 1900s. In 1916, Badger was convicted of sexually assaulting a 10-year-old girl, a crime largely forgotten when he died in 1965 at the age of 96. The school board in November decided to rename the school. The board considered 2 other names, Ursa Major Elementary School and Trenyakta Elementary School. Trenyakta is a Minto Athabascan word for where we are growing. During a meeting last night, the Anchorage Assembly certified the results of this month's municipal elections. And it was also the last time the body's current members will all share the dais. As Alaska Public Media Zechariah Hughes reports, though the Assembly deals mostly with the dry nuts and bolts of municipal governance, the occasion was a rare glimpse of personality and sentiment.
Of the 11 people on the Assembly, 4 are saying goodbye. All but one of those departures are due to term limits, and that includes Chugiak Eagle River Representative Bill Starr, who used his remarks to wax sentimental about what his 9 years on the Assembly have meant.
Pretty much non-sexy stuff. This is the things that we changed our little world by.
The Assembly's work is highly technical and mostly thankless. The regular meetings in Midtown's Lusac Library are the most public display of the body's work. Often, it's hard to know what's even going on because of all the technical jargon and procedural rules flying back and forth. While there might be little bits of banter, it's rare to see displays of collegiality or friendship.
Oh, thank you. Let's talk about comic books for a moment.
Like when South Anchorage Assemblymember John Weddleton, who owns a comic book store, spoke of his departing colleagues.
Some of you may not know, but at Christmas time, I gave everyone a little jar of tasty jam and a special custom-made button.
Each one had a comic book figure that, for one reason or another, Weddleton thinks says something about the recipient.
Bill Evans was Magneto. And, you know, Magneto, a lot of people loathe him. A lot of people champion him. Magneto doesn't care, which you do. But wherever Magneto is, you know, big things are going to happen.
Going down the list, outgoing downtown representative Patrick Flynn was Loki. Chairwoman Elvie Gray Jackson was Storm. And Bill Starr was Iron Man.
Not just because he's a rich guy who likes to fly, but also, you know, one way or the other, he ends up fighting really hard for what he thinks is right, and that's important.
Though the assembly is technically nonpartisan, it's hardly immune from political divisions. But even members who have sparred in the past reflected sentimentally on working with one another. Eagle River Representative Amy Domboski, a champion of conservative causes on the body, cried as she recalled passing her first piece of legislation with progressive Gray Jackson. As for Gray Jackson,
I'm tired of crying. I really am. I've been crying all day. So with that said, I've asked Madam Clerk to read my notes.
With that, Gray Jackson, who spent decades in public service working for the city and as an assembly staffer before getting elected to the body, handed a sheet of paper to Clerk Barbara Jones.
The only words of wisdom I have for all of you is to remember why we are here. We are here to represent the citizens of Anchorage. To all, thank you for making the last 9 years some of the best years of my life. You're welcome.
Shortly afterwards, new members were sworn in and the full body rearranged its leadership. Dick Traney was voted in as chair, a position he's held multiple times over the years, and former congressional candidate Forrest Dunbar, who represents East Anchorage, was picked as vice chair. The newcomers will have their first full meeting next week. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
The Statewide Trails Conference opens tomorrow in Anchorage and will focus on issues such as making trails sustainable and active transportation. Steve Cleary with Alaska Trails says part of the conference explores the health benefits of trails and how to connect them so they can be used for daily transportation.
So as we see obesity increasing, we see trail usage as a way to combat that. If people can build it into their everyday lives, including going to and from school, to and from work, and any other errands they do during the day.
Cleary says they'll also discuss how to maintain both rural and urban trails far into the future and train volunteers to care for the trails.
Trails are such an integral part of Alaska life that that maintaining them and advocating for them is very important, and that's what we're excited to do at the Trails Conference.
The conference runs through Saturday. The last day is free to the public and will focus on volunteering and stewardship. More information is at our website, alaskapublic.org. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Zachariah Hughes, Casey Grove, Ann Hillman, and Liz Ruskin in Anchorage, Andrew Kitchenman and Caroline Halter in Juneau, and Dave Benninger in Dillingham. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alaska Pipeline Service Company, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977.
And by
the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.